Wilson, and what a game we have for you today. The Jacksonville Jaguars play host to the New York Jets. And Danny, the Jaguars come into this game as big favorites, but will they live up to the hype?
Well, they are big favorites, Jim, no doubt about that. 9.5 points to be exact. Now, what that means is, if a person bet the Jaguars on a parlay with, let's say, Cincinnati, who, as we know, won earlier today, that would pay that person 13-5. So, if a person had bet, let's say, $127,000, that would pay off $457,200. That would cover any bad wagers that that person would have made in the past. Why, it's like wiping the slate clean, Jim. That person would be even for the first time in his life.
And welcome to the fourth installment of the QB2 Experience podcast. If you've listened to the first three, you know that my name is Salvatore Stefanelli. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB. On the line with me is my talented co-host, Jim Saunas of NumberFire. You can find Jim on Twitter at Jim Saunas, Jim S-A-N-N-E-S. Jim, how are you doing tonight?
It is all good. Sal, what's up? How are you doing?
Me, I am tired. I had to take a red-eye flight from the Pacific Standard Time Zone. Then I had to fly into the Eastern Standard Time Zone this morning. I am still alive. I survived. If I was Davis Maddock, I probably wouldn't know where I am right now. But luckily, I don't have that problem.
So, I generally don't know where I am, so I'm glad that you were at least cognizant enough to figure that much out, and I think that bodes well for the podcast today.
I mean, like, it's usually hit and miss for me, but I knew that I'd be on a podcast touting Alex Smith, so that was like my compass, my guide.
Your emotional centering.
Yeah, exactly. So we can't blame the lack of sleep on any Alex Smith recommendations, because that usually happens two or three times for
right.
podcast anyways. Or anyway. So I guess we can just get into our accountability section. That's what we call in the show notes for the people who like to know the behind-the-scenes magic, which basically we go over what we got wrong and anything we may have gotten right, which is kind of rare.
So it's hard, you know?
I mean, like we mentioned it on podcast before, for us it's always about process over results. Mm-hmm. Like, I find that this podcast is helpful in terms of showing our process, in terms of who we like to stream and who we think is someone you might want to bench. I think that's more valuable information than how they finish at the end of the week. But I'm not stupid. I know what matters in fantasy football. It's the results. So we take our lumps when we come. We're not going to hide behind anything we got wrong. So we'll just dive right into it, Jim. So last week, our top streaming recommendations were Marcus Mariota and Ryan Tannehill. I think we did okay with Ryan Tannehill. He had over 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, a couple of picks. He finished as QB 7 on the week?
QB 10, on fantasy data at least.
QB 10, yep, you're right. I'm already wrong, and we're only, 2 minutes into the podcast? So yeah, QB 10 scored almost 19 fantasy points, so that was a good week for Tannehill, even with the 2 picks.
Right.
Marcus Mariota, on the other hand, though, he didn't even hit the 5 fantasy point mark and finished as the QB 30. So he was basically unstartable in 2 quarterback leagues. And if you're crazy enough to play in a 3 quarterback league, you probably wouldn't have been happy with the results there either.
No, I mean, and Marcus Mariota, I think that, I mean, Tannehill's fine, you know, whatever. It wasn't a great result. I think that, you know, he was a lot worse than I expected him to be. So I think I will absolutely take where he finished. I think that was, you know, based on how it looked at the beginning, I'll take that. But as far as Marcus Mariota goes, I think that's one of the issues with, you know, setting in your streamers early in the week, because a lot of things do change. If you look at Marcus Mariota, not only was their line movement going against Tennessee, where when we recorded the podcast, they were favorites over Oakland. By the time we hit kickoff on Sunday, I think they were 1.5 point underdogs to Oakland at home, which is generally a bad sign when there's line movement that's that heavy. And a big part of that, I'm assuming, was Delanie Walker. He did not play due to a hamstring injury. I don't worry too much about the assets involved when it's a guy like Philip Rivers. I think that he is a person, you know, despite what the splits say last year, he can succeed without Keenan Allen in the lineup. With Marcus Mariota, because he's younger and he doesn't have the same track record of efficiency that Philip Rivers has, I put a lot more weight into the healthiness of their receiving corps, something we'll talk about later for looking at week four as well. But for Mariota, I mean, losing Delanie Walker was a really big ding for him. I don't think that was the entire reason that he didn't succeed. I think part of that may have been, our overrating of Mariota, the person to begin with. But, you know, I think that Delanie Walker injury certainly did play a role in the disappointing output.
Yeah, and if, you know, we rewind quickly to week two, Oakland gave up the most fantasy points to tight ends.
Right.
24. Right. And that was against whoever Atlanta brought it out that week. So it made a little bit of a difference, I would say. And then from our rapid fire recommendations, we had Dak Prescott, Joe not so flat goat, and Alex kind of goatish Smith.
Yeah.
Dak was clearly the belle of the ball. He even outscored Ryan Tannehill, 23.52 fantasy points, QB6 on the week. We kept talking about, no, wait for the passing touchdowns, wait for the passing touchdowns. It will happen, and it finally did happen, and we saw the results from it. Flacco scored just under 12 fantasy points, was a QB21, so kind of outside of the QB2 tier if you play in a 10-team two quarterback league. And now Alex Smith, 13.18 fantasy points, kind of pedestrian, but no, isn't really going to kill you. Finished as QB18, so still in that QB2 tier. But yeah, basically Dak was the best of them all last week.
I think Dak really outperformed my expectations too in this one, just because I think that I was liking his early results just because he was being pretty efficient. But now once we include that third game, he is number five's fifth most efficient passer this year on a per dropback basis. And he also has the fourth highest success rate. And I know that we've heard a lot of comparisons between him and Carson Wentz. Wentz is above him on a per dropback basis. But as far as success rate goes, Prescott is fourth and Carson Wentz is 24th. Part of that is situation, you know, the offensive line is great in Dallas. Losing Lyle Collins hurts, and Tyron Smith missed that game last week too. But I do think that Dak is a really solid fantasy asset. Those touchdowns will come, and they did come last week. And I think that going forward, as long as he has the pieces around him, which is obviously big due to the Dez Bryant news that he may miss a couple of weeks, as long as he has those assets in place, Dak is going to be a pretty good fantasy asset.
Yeah, I mean, I know this is a streaming podcast, but if you look at his overall numbers on the season, he's currently the fantasy QB11. Mm-hmm. The crazy thing is he has only one passing touchdown.
Yeah.
So even if you add in his two rushing touchdowns, it gives you a total of three. That's still the fewest amount of touchdowns by anybody in the top 12 of the current QB1
right
here. So, I mean, it just kind of shows you like how high that ceiling is for him if he just
right
starts, you know, throwing some more yards and starts throwing some more touchdowns.
Yeah, and I think that kind of illustrates why we were disappointed with Dak's output in week one, because he had the yardage and, you know, he did fine. It just wasn't, the touchdowns weren't there. But now once we start to see that regression come around, he's throwing efficiently, he's not throwing interceptions, it's going to lead to quality fantasy output. So I think that we should be optimistic about Dak, again with the caveat that you want to check on Dez Bryant's health first.
Exactly. And that leaves us with our last pick from last week. It wasn't a recommendation to start, but rather a recommendation to bench in the form of Kirk Cousins, who actually ended up outscoring Ryan Tannehill as
right
well. 19.3 fantasy points, QB9, just one slot ahead of Tannehill.
Yeah, and a lot of that, from our perspective last week, was based around the Giants' defense. But during that game, they lost Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, Eli Apple, and others. So I think that we may have overrated the Giants defense to begin with, which is part of the process, but also you can't really predict when a couple of defensive backs are both going to go out in the same game. So, I still, in retrospect, maybe shouldn't have been as pessimistic about Cousins, but I don't know how he would have performed necessarily had those injuries to Rodgers-Cromartie and Apple not happened.
Yeah, it's probably one of those darkest timeline situations
right
for community
right
storylines, which we don't have the power to do on this podcast,
right,
unfortunately. It's so that's probably it in terms of a recap for week three. And we'll just move straight into the week four streaming recommendations. We'll start it off with, this might not be a name most people would consider streaming this week, but Sam Bradford versus the New York Giants. The Vikings have a 23.5 implied team total. They're playing at home, 4-point favorites as of right now, with a 43 over-under. It's not the highest, but no, it could be worse.
Yeah, and I think the reason that I like Sam Bradford here is that, you know, there are a lot of factors, actually. It does, you know, refer back to the injuries that the Giants suffered back in week three. I think that's definitely part of it, because it seems as if Rodgers, Cromartie, and Apple will both miss this game. But, Sal, like you mentioned, Vegas doesn't mind this game. The implied team total is actually inching up a bit, too, because the line has moved to 4.5 in favor of Minnesota. So line is up to, or the implied team total is up to 23.75. It seems as if people are starting to buy into Minnesota. And the other thing that I like about this game is that it's taking place in a dome, and traditionally scoring has been higher in domes, both, you know, from a, you know, raw scoring perspective, but also when it comes to fantasy, and that's true for quarterbacks, running backs, kickers, everything pretty much. They all do better in domes. And, you know, looking at Sam Bradford, we don't have a huge sample size on him yet, but he's currently 10th in number of fires passing efficiency metrics, which is very good. I think that that's certainly encouraging, considering they faced Carolina and Green Bay, two good defenses. Green Bay was without Sam Shields, but at the same time, not a bad defense to face. And looking at the Giants, mentioned Rodgers, Cromartie, and Apple, but they're 20th against the pass based on number fires metrics, and that includes a good amount of time when they've had both those guys in there. Now we look forward to this week. They likely won't have either of those guys. Sam Bradford is at home, and I think that, you know, we do talk a lot about efficiency, Sal, and that's definitely something that we prefer, but this seems like it should be a decent amount of volume at the same time, because the Vikings offensive line is pretty beat up. Matt Khalil is out for the year. And then also left guard Alex Boone looks like he's going to play, but did leave the game in week three early, so he's not necessarily healthy. And that offensive line has essentially prevented the Vikings from running the ball effectively this year. And the Giants defense is 10th against the run. They have Damon Snacks Harrison. It kind of seems like this could wind up being a funnel game where the Vikings wind up throwing the ball quite a bit. And I think that they have the assets to make Sam Bradford into a really good option. I'm using him in a one quarterback 16 team league this week. I'm using him over Tyrod Taylor just because I am pretty confident in this matchup. And I think that it's one where Sam Bradford could potentially do pretty well for you.
Yeah, I mean, when you first look at the quarterbacks and the matchups for the week, Sam Bradford versus the New York Giants doesn't really stand out to you.
Right.
I mean, if you look at the numbers just on the surface, the Giants this year so far have allowed the QB26, QB21, and QB9 finish. But no, QB26 in week one, that's Dak Prescott. Who, if you know, Beasley didn't drop the pass and Dez's pass didn't get overturned, no, that's an extra 8 fantasy points to Dak's total, and that could go from like QB26 to, I think, probably would have been QB12-ish. If I remember, we talked about this before. Drew Brees, I mean, like I said, the Giants defense kind of just played out that week, but still, 263 yards and a touchdown was almost 15 fantasy points. I mean, you can't really complain about getting 15 fantasy points from your QB2. And like I said, and then QB9, we saw Kirk Cousins last week, almost 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. Those defensive injuries kind of played a part. It's a chance where the Vikings still don't really know what they want to do with their running backs in terms of Jerick McKinnon, Matt Asiata. I don't know what kind of team do they want to be. And if we've seen what Bradford can do when he locks onto one receiver and Stephon Diggs, and we kind of saw that last week with Cousins and DeSean Jackson. I know in the past the Giants have been bad against tight ends. They've kind of held them in check this year. Witten, Fleener, and Reed. The highest has been 9 catches and 66 yards, both by Witten in the same game. We've seen the connection Bradford and Kyle Rudolph have had this season so far, and it wouldn't really surprise me to see Rudolph get between 8 to 10 targets.
Right.
And he could do some damage with that this week, which, you know, helps Bradford out having 2 legitimate pass-catching options in that offense. You know, we've seen the past few years how there really hasn't even been. I mean, Stephon Diggs emerged like last year, but before that, it wasn't really the prettiest pass catching weapons in Minnesota. So it's like, this is like a legitimate offense right now in Minnesota, and they're doing it without Adrian Peterson, which is something people in the fantasy community were kind of talking about this offseason. It's like, if they were to lose Adrian Peterson, it wouldn't really hurt the offense, because then it would give him more of an identity in terms of, you know, being able to pass and open up the game and give Jerick McKinnon more opportunity. And we're getting to see that now. So I like all the, like the, let's say the factors in Bradford's favor. And you mentioning that the line is moving up. I wouldn't, if it's moving up now and we're only in Wednesday evening,
right,
by the time Sunday comes around, like I could see this game creeping up to like maybe 45 over under, them getting to 24 implied points. Mm-hmm. Like I
and that's a big number for a quarterback streamer. Yeah.
So yeah, you might not really consider Sam Bradford someone to stream this week, but that's why you have us bringing up these outside the box scenarios. And it's not like the Giants were really good last year against quarterbacks. Right. You know, if those injuries in the secondary continue this week, I don't have a status on Rogers, Cromartie, or Eli Apple. We probably won't know anything until later in the week, so you might want to keep an eye on that. But if you take away like those two options, like Eli Apple was their first round pick, you know, we thought their defense was getting better, but if it goes back, regresses to what it was last year, they allowed the third most top 12 fantasy quarterback finishes with 8, and 15 out of the 16 quarterbacks that faced them last year were at least a top 24 option. So it gives you a little bit of a floor and a little bit of a ceiling here this week with Sam Bradford.
All right, and that's all before we touch on the pace, too, that the Giants run. They run a lot of no huddle, and right now, according to Football Outsiders, they have the sixth highest situation neutral pace. And I think that, you know, if Minnesota does get out to a lead, we'll probably see a pretty high pace from the Giants that gives more volume to Minnesota. You mentioned Jerick McKinnon. He is the greatest running back of all time. I think that only aids Sam Bradford even more. So I think that, even though it's not necessarily the most, like, the one you're going to have a lot of confidence in, I do have a decent amount of confidence in this one. So hopefully good old Sammy boy doesn't flop on, I think it's Monday night, actually.
Yeah, that is the Monday night game. So, I mean, it doesn't matter now anymore for DFS because the Monday slate isn't part of the main slates, but you can be your Monday night hammer in two quarterback leagues.
Monday night hammer in season long is so much fun. Just especially if you were a Falcons investor this last week.
Imagine like you were in a, like a high scoring matchup in your two quarterback league and you see your opponent only has Sam Bradford left and it's really close. How tilting is it going to be for you to watch that game and see Sam Bradford produce?
Oh, man. It'll be tilting for me if I'm trailing in that 16-team league and he doesn't make it. And I'll be like, Jim, this is your own stupidity. So fingers crossed that doesn't happen. We'll see, but fingers crossed at least.
I mean, tune in next week to find out.
Right. If you hear vomit all over my microphone, you know what happened.
All right. So that now brings us on to our next streaming recommendation for the week. This is the person we told you to bench last week. So it shows you we have no ill will towards Kirk Cousins. This week he gets himself probably one of the more prime matchups of the week every week against the Cleveland Browns. They're at home. 9.5 home favorites, 45.5 over under, 27.5 implied team total. Those kind of check off all the boxes. One stat I kind of found myself leaning towards a couple of weeks ago was from Chris Raybon over at 444, formerly of Number Fire. So keep him in the Number Fire family. He had listed off what makes a top six fantasy quarterback. And to him, it was a home favorite with an implied team total of 24. And that was, I believe that was heading into week two, that 70% of all top six fantasy quarterbacks reached those or had those three thresholds on their resume. And as of right now, Kirk Cousins checks off each one of those. So that's in his favor. We've seen what Cleveland has done in the past against quarterbacks, which I mean their defense, which isn't a whole lot. Last year, they allowed the second most top 12 finishes to quarterbacks with 9. And just like the Giants, 15 out of the 16 quarterbacks they faced were at least top 24 quarterback for that week. This year, we've seen them allow the QB11, the QB19, and the QB10 finish. So two out of the three have been top 12 quarterbacks. So that's also good odds in our favors for this week.
Yeah, and if you look at Kirk Cousins, I mean, if you have him, you know, available to you, you need to be using him. I think that he's a great daily fantasy option for this week. But also, I mean, for season long, he has a really nice floor because of the matchup, but he's a guy who also brings this ceiling. If you look at Kirk Cousins' fantasy performance so far, it's really not that great. Sal, you sent over a link to fantasy data, which shows red zone, you know, situation, red zone scoring for this year. And I think it said that Kirk Cousins has like 1.62 total points passing in the red zone so far this year, which is unfathomably low, but he's still been okay the past 2 weeks as far as fantasy goes. And I think that a lot of that screams that this guy is bound for some regression. Looking at number fire's efficiency metrics for Kirk Cousins, he is the ninth most efficient passer of the, I think it's 36 quarterbacks with at least 30 dropbacks. And he's also sixth in success rate. So even though he has kind of been awful in the red zone so far, a situation where you can lose a lot of those expected points that fuel number fire's metrics, his overall outlook is still really good, which says that this he's still performing well, and those assets around him are doing well enough where he can be a really good fantasy quarterback. And I'd mentioned that Cousins is sixth in success rate. The Browns, so far this year, as Sal mentioned how well they've done in fantasy, but they haven't yet faced a quarterback who is in the top 20 in number fire's success rate, and they've still been really good fantasy assets. And now they face Cousins, who looks as if he is the best opponent they have faced so far this year. The line is moving a bit on this one in the wrong direction. It's now down to a 7.5 point favorite for Washington, which lowers their implied team total to 26.75. But for me, you know, putting Kirk Cousins at home against a defense that's lacking talent, I know their safety Ibrahim Campbell was out last week, which I haven't seen status on him for this week, but they're not necessarily fully healthy. Joe Hayden is dealing with an injury too. So I think that a lot of the factors line up to make Kirk Cousins a really good player for this week, if he's available to you.
Yeah, I mean, like, those red zone stats are pretty crazy. I got them up right now. 7 of 22, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, 1.62 fantasy points.
That's insane.
Even crazier is that he has 1.62 red zone fantasy points, but the last 2 weeks, he scored 18 and 19 fantasy points. He wasn't a top 12 guy last week, but he was just on the cusp, QB14. But you want to know what's even crazier than that stat? Is that Cody Kessler has more red zone fantasy points than Kirk Cousins this year. But do you want to hear Cody Kessler's stat line in the red zone? Because this is just going to make you pull your hair out.
I want to hear it. Let's go.
One completion for negative 4 yards.
What? Yeah. How?
I don't know how. I don't know how. And then that somehow equates to 1.84 fantasy points. That doesn't seem right.
Well, I'm sure that there's some reason for that. It might be some rushing or something in there, but that's insane. And I mean, you know, it's just what that, again, all says to me is that this is bound to change for Kirk Cousins. He's not going – I mean, he wasn't awful in the red zone last year. I think he was actually outlierishly good. So this is a bit of a regression for him, but everything kind of says that he's going to bounce back, both in real terms and in fantasy. And when that happens, it's going to result in big-time fantasy outputs. And I think that he's in a good enough spot this week going up against the Cleveland Browns where all that could kind of come to fruition all at once.
Yeah, we mentioned like the finishes Cleveland has allowed this week, and it's not like it's to elite high-end quarterbacks. They face Carson Wentz, Joe Flacco, and Ryan Tannehill in the first three games.
Elite Joe Flacco.
All right, so they have faced an elite quarterback. I will take it back. We will never let Joe Flacco leave our podcast without being mentioned as elite. I think that's going to be one of our new rules.
Right.
But I think, I think that covers everything for Kirk Cousins. Watching the line throughout the week is going to be something interesting to see just how much it does change.
Yeah. Because I wasn't expecting that one to move. So I mean, that's interesting to me that it did move.
Because I was looking at the all of the implied team totals for the week, and Philip Rivers at the time was number one with the Chargers at 28.5 or 28.75.
Yeah, and he's up there now. Yep.
Yeah, and then when you just saw Kirk Cousins just like a smidge below that at 27.5, it kind of it screamed to me streamer of the week.
Absolutely, yeah. And again, I think that the only reason he didn't pop to my mind is I figured that he wouldn't really be an option. But yeah, I mean, his ADP this year, I guess, was lower than I thought it would be. So yeah, if you've got Cousins, you got to roll him out. I think that if it's between him and Bradford, I'd go Cousins all day, every day. Absolutely. But I think that it's just kind of more an availability question for Kirk because he, you know, I think that he was a bit more overlooked than I thought he'd be coming into the season.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show you the depth of the quarterback position.
Right, exactly.
Someone like Kirk Cousins coming off a top 10 fantasy season was being drafted as the quarterback 15.
Right.
And so I think it's safe to say that we'll probably talk about any quarterback that's a streaming
right.
candidate that plays Cleveland every week on this podcast. So it's going to be interesting to see next week when they face, I know, Tom Brady returning from his 4-game suspension. Like, he could finish as, like, the top QB1 with the highest fantasy points scored in a game of all time.
I can't wait till Tom Brady, like, scores 12 points.
Like, that would be great. That would not surprise me if he...
I live in Boston, and Boston would burn, and that would not be good. But it would be, you know, if it didn't literally burn, it'd be at least kind of entertaining to listen to, like, the talk radio and stuff.
Let's see. Last year, the highest fantasy points in a game was 44.3. That was the Drew Brees Saints Giants shootout. I wouldn't be surprised if Tom Brady hit that. 500 passing yards, 7 touchdowns. That's in play for it. Can we just?
I think that's the median expectation, right?
Yeah, let's say that. I mean, if this podcast was recorded last year, we could have streamed Tom Brady because he was drafted as the quarterback 13 last year when all the suspension talk was going on. It didn't phase drafters this year, though. He was in, let me check it out, QB7? Yeah, QB7 this year. That still was a little bit low.
Yeah, I picked him up in a couple of MFL 10s just because it seemed like his ADP was a bit too low. It was lower than I thought it would be based on what he did last year, even with the suspension in mind.
So I know everyone was making fun of the Cleveland Browns for starting 5 different quarterbacks in 5 weeks. But no, New England goes from Jimmy Garoppolo to
right.
Jacoby Brissett to maybe Julian Edelman this week. Let's just throw that out there. Julian Edelman is starting. We heard that from our sources. To Tom Brady next week.
That'd be great.
And they'll be 4-0.
I think Julian Edelman would be good, but I'm a big Chris Hogan fan. So if we can get Chris Hogan back there in the Wildcat with Edelman, I'd be totally down for that.
So basically dual Wildcat Madden formation.
Do it. All right. Down. Totally down.
So not only do you get streaming recommendations from this podcast, but you also get
game plans.
Yeah, let's call it quote-unquote game plan.
Right.
All right, so there we go. That is Sam Bradford and Kirk Cousins as our top 2 streamers of the week. We have one more guy that we kind of like above the fray for this week compared to other options, and that's our good pal, the elite Joe Flacco. this week, Joe Flacco and the Baltimore Ravens are taking on the Oakland Raiders, a team we've liked to pick on as well in this podcast. Last I checked, it was a 25 implied team total, 46.5 over-under, which so far is the highest one we've talked about on the podcast this week. 3.5 home favorites isn't the greatest. We've kind of mentioned anything around 3.5 for a home team is basically like a pick'em game. When I was kind of looking at this one, I think the over-under is kind of low to me. Just based on the potential shootout of this game and just how bad the Oakland defense can be, unless they're playing Marcus Mariota.
Of course.
Yeah, we'll probably never get over that. I still can't fathom the results that happened with that one last week.
So
there's
bad.
Just so much hope going into that game. Because, like, Oakland, in the first 2 weeks, they allowed the second highest scoring fantasy quarterback in both weeks. No.
Nice.
2 weeks, so 2 QB2 finishes, and Marcus Mariota comes in 4.76 fantasy points and quarterback 30 finish. It's basically just been going off of what happened last year. No, 9 top 12 finishes allowed, second most, 13 top 24. We thought the defense had improved, but it turns out that it didn't. Oakland is currently allowing the third most fantasy points per game to the quarterback position at 21.3 fantasy points, and that's when you factor in Marcus Mariota's 4.76 fantasy points performance. So that could be even worse than it is.
Yeah, it absolutely could, and I think that that's part of the reason why you can still like Flacco this week. And I mean, he's been super underwhelming overall. I mean, he's had good matchups, but he hasn't really pulled through in those. I loved Flacco's first four game schedule heading into the season, and he's a guy who I paired with Tom Brady in NFL 10s that I took just because I thought his schedule was really nice, but he's been kind of meh so far. But you mean, you look at his performances, he's still been quarterback 23 or higher each of the first 3 weeks. So for a two quarterback league, that's not a terrible floor. And the good thing about Flacco is now he heads home, where he's been a lot better than he has been on the road. If we look at the RotoViz splits app, since the start of 2014, Flacco has averaged 0.57 interceptions per game at home, and that jumps to 1.33 interceptions per game on the road. So more than double the interceptions when he's on the road. And so what that does is obviously you do lose points for the interceptions, but more importantly, it takes away scoring opportunities. And that's what we want for a quarterback. We'd want to just flood them with scoring opportunities, you know, chances in the red zone where they can rush one in like Flacco did last week, or they can, you know, throw a touchdown as well. So, you know, I think that this is still a good game for Flacco. You look back to week one, the other game where he was at home against an okay Bills defense, that game had bad weather, high winds in that one, and also a super slow pace. So I think that you can reasonably explain why Flacco has been down, whether it be playing on the road or, you know, dealing with bad weather. And now he gets a decent matchup. Even after that, you know, dismantling of Marcus Mariota in week three, Oakland is still number five's 30th ranked pass defense. So that didn't really change their ranking a lot. They were last heading into last week, but, you know, 30th isn't a whole lot better. And you look at the potential streamers, and there are no potential streaming quarterbacks with a higher implied team total than Baltimore has right now. So it does kind of, you know, it checks off the boxes like you were talking about before, Sal. And I think that even though it's not necessarily a super high ceiling for Joe Flacco, I think that he has a high enough floor where you definitely do want to consider him in two quarterback leagues.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just pretend that game against Tennessee didn't happen. And if you look at the numbers put up by the opposing quarterbacks against Oakland in that game, no, Drew Brees had 42 attempts. Matt Ryan had 34 attempts. They have allowed almost 400 yards passing to both of those quarterbacks, combined 7 touchdowns, I believe. And you mentioned the red zone stats. We talked about a Kirk Cousins earlier. The complete opposite of Kirk Cousins is Joe Flacco.
Right.
He only has 4 attempts in the red zone so far this year, but he's completed 3 of them, and 2 of those 3 completions have been touchdowns. So once he actually gets into the red zone and he has some attempts, he's been efficient with his opportunities. And it would not. And he also has a rushing touchdown to boot in the red zone.
Of course he does. Yeah. Konami Flacco.
There you go. So if the game kind of turns out the way we expect it to, and it is a shootout, and there is lots of passing volume, and Baltimore finds himself in the red zone, we've seen they don't have a running game. Kenneth Dixon, I don't believe, is going to be ready to come back this week. I know they've mentioned he's kind of getting ready to practice again or getting nearer practice shape, but I highly doubt he's going to play this week. Right. So we've seen what that running game has been like without him. It's basically just been the Joe Flacco pass show. So if they can get into the red zone, the opportunities are going to be there for Flacco to, you know, either throw it or run it in himself, because, you know, if the lanes are open, the receivers are blocked, he just has basically a free entry to walk into the red zone. And basically Oakland just has, you know, not been able to stop quarterbacks. Their defense, and they tend to play against, you know, they play against bad defenses as well that have just led to shootouts. They've had 2 games where it was, let's say, week one was a 35-34 win, and week two was a 35-28 loss. I feel like this Baltimore game is going to be more in line with those two games than the Tennessee game. So just line up for Joe Flacco to have another good week where he can be a top streaming recommendation, like we've mentioned in the podcast. But at the same time, it could also turn out to be what happened to Marcus Mariota last week, where we'll just sit here, type on our keyboard, process the results. process all results. Right. Process all results. Like, we have to admit it could happen.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's always a possibility. I think that, you know, adding one more thing in for Joe Flacco is that the Baltimore defense has been pretty good this year. You know, based on Number Fire's metrics, they are the sixth best defense overall. And what that can do is that, I mean, it might deter a potential shootout, but at the same time, what that can do is if they generate turnovers, that's going to set Joe Flacco up with high leverage opportunities, and that's all positive for him. So I think that overall, things do line up well. I know that Flacco has been pretty disappointing so far, and I wouldn't expect him to be this, you know, this gangbuster at all in week number four. But I do think that it's high enough. The expectation should be high enough where you can at least plug him in.
All right, and that brings us to the next segment of our podcast. We still didn't come up with a catchy name for you, so we'll still just keep calling it the quarterback you should consider benching in week four. Last week, this didn't go so well for us. We mentioned earlier, it's Kirk Cousins. He actually scored more points than one of our top scored more points than both of our top stream recommendations. But no, we feel this week we did some more processing, some more researching, and we might have tinkered with the system where it's going to be flawless. And so you definitely don't want to start this guy.
Don't listen to us. You do want to start him.
And that is Eli Manning. On the road, Monday night against Sam Bradford and the Minnesota Vikings. We mentioned what we like about Sam Bradford this week, so let's go over what we don't like about Eli Manning. Just a quick hits. You mentioned the line moved earlier. When I checked it out, Eli's implied team total was, or not Eli's, but the Giants' implied team total was 19.5. Did that change at all since I last checked?
It is down to 19.25 because the Vikings actually became more highly favored. So that actually, Vegas is apparently on team bench Eli as well.
Well, that the 0.25, that's the Canadian exchange rate going into Minnesota near the Canadian border.
Right.
That was at the time the fifth lowest team total of the week. Is that still correct?
Right now he has Cleveland, Miami, Tennessee, and Los Angeles below him. So yeah, same right there. But it's not pretty either way. Yeah.
So there we have a low team total, underdogs, and on the road against what has become a really stout defense this year. Minnesota, in terms of fantasy, I mean, they've allowed the QB15, QB17, and QB19. That's still all basically in the QB2 tier, but the talent of quarterbacks they faced was Marcus Mariota, Aaron Rodgers, and Cam Newton. I mean, in back-to-back weeks, Aaron Rodgers and Cam Newton have basically been like low-end QB2s in fantasy, so that has to scare you off, and it's one of the reasons why we're off of Eli this week. And so far, and like, going back to, like, I like to mention like last year's finishes. I know they don't always predict to this year, but based on just how Minnesota's been playing this year, last year they allowed only 10 top 24 finishes to the quarterback position, and that was the third fewest in the league.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at this one too, and I think that there are a lot of reasons to believe that the Vikings defense is really legit. I mean, we know about the talent they have in the front seven. I mean, they've got guys like Everson Griffin, Danielle Hunter's playing more now, Linval Joseph, Brian Robeson. They've got really good guys up front, but now their secondary is starting to get healthy. I mean, they've had Harrison Smith back there, but Xavier Rhodes made his season debut in week three. And if you remember the dud that Kelvin Benjamin put up, a lot of that was due to Xavier Rhodes holding him to one target and no catches for the entire day. Right now, the Vikings defense is sixth based on Number Fire's metrics against the pass, I should say. And, you know, that was without Rhodes for two of those games unexpectedly because the injury didn't occur until he was in warmups for that first game against Marcus Mariota and the Tennessee Titans. So it really does look as if this is going to be a good defense. And you mentioned the poor outing by Cam in week three. That was actually in Carolina as well, a situation where Minnesota doesn't have the noise that they'll have at US Bank Stadium, their brand new dome. So you kind of get that Metrodome effect once again, where it used to be super loud in the dome. Now they get that again with the glassed interior, and I think that it kind of lines up where I wouldn't be starting many quarterbacks against the Vikings this year just because that defensive line is so ferocious. Xavier Rhodes is looking good again. He had some rough spots last year, but it looks like he's kind of back to where he was in 2014. And the and also Harrison Smith too. So the talent lines up, the Vegas totals line up against Eli, and you know, because he is Eli Manning, and they have a decently efficient offense and they run a high tempo, a high pace, I can't blame you if you decide to start him, but I would be looking for alternatives if you have absolutely any other options to start a quarterback.
Right. Like, the numbers are telling us don't start Eli Manning.
Right.
I mentioned the finishes Minnesota is allowed, but we also looked at the talent level of the quarterbacks they faced. Right now they're allowing the 12th fewest fantasy points per game to the quarterback position, 15.8. When you factor in that it's against Marcus Mariota, Aaron Rodgers, and Cam Newton, it's even more impressive. They have more interceptions than passing touchdowns allowed. 5 interceptions to 3 passing touchdowns. You know, they picked off Cam 3 times last week and didn't allow him to score through the air. He did add a rushing touchdown, which boosts his fantasy potential. I mean, not fantasy potential, his fantasy totals. And if we look at Eli Manning, I mean, it just kind of sets up for a week for him to, you know, have one of his kind of duds. And this year, he had 18 fantasy points in week one, but in week two against New Orleans, which was one of the more prime matchups he's going to have all year, he threw for 368 yards, but only scored 12 fantasy points. Against Washington, which was another good matchup last week, he threw for 350 yards and had only 14 fantasy points. And that includes a touchdown. In week two, he didn't score a touchdown against New Orleans. So it's like lining up for one of those weeks where you should bench Eli Manning. He should have a good game. Everything says he's going to have a good game, but then he could come out and have one of those patented Eli Manning out of nowhere QB1 weeks.
Right. Yeah, and I think that overall I still like Eli for this year, because it seems like the assets they have in the passing game between Odell Beckham, Sterling Shepard, and Victor Cruz, and then Larry Donnell and Will Tye as well, it seems as if they do have good assets in that passing game. And now the injuries to the running backs, they should be passing the ball a lot, which gives him good volume. But overall, I don't like him enough in the long term to trust him in a matchup as bad as this one.
Yeah, and this is looking like it's potentially going to be the toughest matchup he has this week.
Right, you know, right.
Philly's kind of turned it around on defense, but we've seen Eli Manning have shootouts against that Eagles defense in the past, and it's only 3 weeks of data for the Eagles defense and the quarterbacks they face, so there's potential for that to turn around. So I still feel like this is going to be the toughest matchup he has this year. So like I said, it's fantasy football is a weekly game, so, and this is the 1 week we think you shouldn't start Eli Manning. That puts a wrap on it for our quarterback to bench segment. Moving on to the last segment of the week is our rapid fire, where we kind of go off on a few guys we like as streamers this week that we just don't love as much as the names we mentioned earlier. Let's just quickly go over Dak Prescott, because at the beginning of the our research process this week, Dak was someone we loved, who were we actually had in our top segment of the week. We were going to talk about over Kirk Cousins, because at the time he had 24.5 implied team total, favored by 3 on the road with a 46 over-under against San Francisco. We've seen the San Francisco defense this year. In the last 2 weeks, they have allowed the quarterback 1 fantasy finish, and if you combine the fantasy points scored by Russell Wilson and Trevon Boykin last week, would have been QB11, but we kind of hit on it earlier than used with Dez Bryant. Hairline fracture, then apparently he missed an MRI and skipped out on some team meetings and has been fined. At least that's all the blurbs on Roto-World as of right now. So a Dak Prescott-less, or not Dak Prescott-less, a Dez Bryant-less Dallas Cowboys often isn't as appealing to stream Dak Prescott in.
No, and I think that, you know, if Dez were there, this would be ideal. I mean, I would love Dak Prescott for DFS then even too, just because he's in a slow-paced offense, but when they're facing an offense like the 49ers that runs so quickly as they do, the fastest offense in football, that's a huge bump for every asset in that offense, not just Dak, but also Dez, Zeke Elliott, guys like that too. But, you know, when you take a top weapon away from a young quarterback like Dak Prescott and put him on the road, I still think he has an okay floor, just because, I mean, the pace of the opposing team, I just don't see him as having any ceiling at all without Dez. So if Dez plays somehow with that hairline fracture in his knee, then you can probably turn to Dak. I think that Vegas still likes this game quite a bit as of right now. But if Dez is out, I really don't – I can't – I can't get too excited about Dak in this matchup.
Yeah, I'm on the Numberphire DFS lineup helper page. Is that the official title for this? DFS helper?
Probably. I always just call it the lineups page because it's just easier for me to say it, and I don't like talking very much, so I just always call it the lineups page, I guess.
So just scrolling down to the Dallas-San Francisco game, still with a 24 implied team total. Looks like the over-under is at 45.5, and so it's a 2.5-point spread as of now. So it hasn't really changed a whole lot.
Yeah, it has moved in San Francisco's favor, but not as much as I was, I guess, expecting it to go.
Yeah, I mean, if you know, once Dez is ruled out officially,
right.
Then I'm pretty sure that implied team total is going to go down a little bit.
Right, I would agree.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, there are still optimistic reasons to start Dak Prescott. We just don't love him as much as we used
right.
to. We still love him overall, just not this week.
Right, correct.
All right, so now that goes from one quarterback we love to another quarterback we most definitely love around these parts. Yes. And that's Alex Smith. He is playing the Pittsburgh Steelers this week. The Chiefs are on the road, currently have a 20.75 implied team total. The game does have a high-ish 47.5 over-under, and the Chiefs are 6-point road underdogs. Not really checking off all the boxes you want to from your streaming quarterback, but when it comes to Alex Smith, we've right. seen in the past, that doesn't really impact him a whole lot.
Yeah, he's the exact opposite of what you think of as far as process for quarterbacks. So I know that how we always talk about loving Alex Smith, but from that aspect, he is abundantly frustrating. And I am quite upset with Alex Smith for this because, you know, I like to have a set process that I can, you know, apply as a blanket. But Alex Smith does not fit that mold at all. So I think that because he'll be forced to throw the ball more against the Steelers defense, I think I like them more than most. But it's not as if they're some shutdown team like the Broncos or, you know, or like the Vikings, like we were just discussing. So the implied team total isn't ideal. I think actually now the spread has moved where Kansas City is only a 5-point underdog and a 5-point underdog in a game with an over under as high as this one. That's enough to get me to like Alex Smith. You know, if it were around like a 7-point dog, like a touchdown dog on the road, then I might even back off Alex Smith, even with his, you know, weird reverse splits. But right now where things stand and the way things are trending, I have no objections to using Alex Smith in this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to pimp out this lineups page again at Numberphire. Like I did my research before when the lines were different, and like I was just refreshing the page during this podcast, and the implied team total has actually gone up for the Chiefs by half a point. They went from 20.75 to 21.25. So there's another factor in Smith's favor that Vegas is starting to give them a little bit more respect. It's not a whole lot, but half a point is half a point.
Right, you'll take that. And I think that that makes a difference as far as leapfrogging other teams because there are teams down in that same realm. I mean, he now has an implied team total that's equal to Derek Carr. It's higher than Jameis Winston, higher than Ryan Fitzpatrick. Should be higher than Geno Smith, but, you know, we'll leave that for a different time to discuss. But, yeah, I mean, that half point does make a difference for Alex Smith, and I think that we should be monitoring that line as we get closer to Sunday because if it continues to creep up, then I think our optimism about Alex Smith should creep up as well.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like the opposite of Dak Prescott. Dak's going
right.
His stock's going down a little bit, but Alex is going up a bit. And if you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers defense this year, in week one, Kirk Cousins was the quarterback 28, so not so great. But he did throw 329 yards that week. So far, the Steelers this week have allowed 300 passing yard quarterbacks. They've only faced three quarterbacks, so it's a 100% success rate. And those quarterbacks, you know, Kirk Cousins, Andy Dalton, Carson Wentz, you wouldn't really consider them all to be in the elite tier unless you live in Philly. And last 2 weeks, they've allowed two top 12 quarterback finishes, QB12 with Andy Dalton, and with almost 20 fantasy points. And, you know, Carson Wentz last week finishes a QB7, just like a shade over 21 fantasy points. So it's a good matchup in terms of the strength of the defense. And I was looking at the RotoViz Game Splits app this week for the Alex Smith matchup, because for some reason in my head I felt like the Chiefs Steelers have had a long-term rivalry the last 3 years since Alex Smith came to Kansas City, which RotoViz let me know right away that was not the case. When I put the Steelers and the opponents for the outlier portion for the in-and-out split, mm-hmm. turns out the Chiefs with Alex Smith have only played Pittsburgh twice the last 3 years, but the numbers were encouraging. He's averaged 17.5 fantasy points against the Steelers in those two games, and he's averaged 7.5 more pass attempts than he has against every other team he's played since joining the Chiefs. And he's also averaging 281 passing yards against the Steelers compared to 215 to everybody else. So if it looks like the numbers are kind of in favor of kind of like a catch-up game for Alex Smith, it seems like. You know, more passing attempts, more passing yards, and we saw what happened in week one when they were down to the Chargers. He went from basically, you know, someone everybody kind of hated to being one of the heroes of the two quarterback week.
Yeah, and I think that with Alex Smith, he always has that floor, and we did see the bad side of that floor, I guess, in week two against Houston. But I don't think that this is a defense that can necessarily get that. You look at the number fire pass rushing stats, and Pittsburgh currently has the worst pass rush in all of football. And with the offensive line health issues that Kansas City has had, they've been without a couple of guards. That also helps Alex Smith. So I think that he doesn't check our traditional boxes, but when we're looking at Alex Smith specifically, he does check the boxes you look for in him.
I think eventually we should just... Oh, wait, no. There is an Alex Smith metric, but it's a bad one, isn't there? Was it Football Outsiders that created the Alex Smith metric?
I haven't read that one. I read a lot of Football Outsiders. I guess I might have seen that, but I don't recall what it is.
I'm trying to... I think they named it after him based on his death. It might not be Football Outsiders, though.
Okay.
That's probably something I should have looked up before coming on the podcast. But it just kind of came up to
funny.
Me right
yeah.
now. I just searched Alex Smith. All right, here we go. Alex, a weekly look at the most aggressive and conservative quarterbacks on third downs. And
that's awesome.
I'm pretty sure it's named after Alex Smith. I could be wrong, but I'm going to just go on a ledge and say that I'm right.
Fingers crossed that it is.
We'll check in next week to see what it actually is. So moving on from Alex Smith to our second rapid fire guy. I mean, these segments isn't really rapid fire, is it?
Not quite, but I think it's warranted to discuss things a bit more sometimes.
No, it's only our fourth podcast. We're still fine
right.
things. So the next quarterback on our rapid fire stream recommendation is Brian Hoyer going up against the Detroit Lions this week. He did have a 21.75 implied team total. Let me check right now if that went up.
It's 22 now, actually.
Moving on up. All right, so there you go. 22 implied team total. The over-under now is at 47. It was 46.5 earlier. And they are currently a 3-point underdog at home against the Lions. But like we mentioned before, it's basically a pick-em game at this point where it's a 3-point spread. Detroit so far this year, quarterback finishes allowed. QB1, QB18, QB3. Those three quarterbacks were Andrew Luck, Marcus Mariota, and Aaron Rodgers last week, who was at 4 touchdowns in the first half.
Yeah, in the first half. It was stupid. Whew.
And we saw last year Detroit allowed 8 top 12 finishes, which was the third most in the league. I know when you think of the name Brian Hoyer, you don't automatically assume quarterback streamer or someone you even want to consider starting at all. Like, you don't even kind of include him with the word streamer. You just include him with the word bench, never pick up, never start. But no, things get crazy. They get frisky into quarterback leagues, and sometimes it comes a point when you have to start Brian Hoyer. No, last year under a fantasy friendly offense with Bill O'Brien, he was a top 12 quarterback 4 times. And if you include his start this year and his games last year, He's scored 17 or more fantasy points in 7 of his last 12 games. And this week he goes up against the Detroit Lions defense, which is currently allowing the most fantasy points to quarterbacks at a rate of 26.1 points per game. So the stats and the signs there kind of show that Brian Hoyer is someone to consider streaming this week. What about how do you feel about that, Jim?
I like it. Yeah, I think it's totally fine to use Brian Hoyer. I mean, I know that Vegas isn't necessarily saying that you should use him because they are underdogs, which is counter to what we usually look for outside of Alex Smith. But right now, Detroit actually has number 5's worst pass defense in the entire league. Whew. And that's schedule adjusted. So that includes, you know, factoring in that they were facing Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers. They are still the worst defense in the league. We mentioned pace with the Giants, and that's something that you have to factor in with Detroit too. They have the second highest situation neutral pace according to Football Outsiders, so they're going to be running up tempo, and that lends itself to a lot of plays from Brian Hoyer. And now you look back to last week, I know that, you know, Hoyer was okay for fantasy, but his advanced metrics were pretty good too. He produced 10.26 passing net expected points against the Cowboys, which is a good number, and it's also more than either Kirk Cousins or Eli Manning had done against the Cowboys in the past. So, you know, relative to those guys, he looked really good. You know, his metrics were good. Now he goes home. It looks like Alshon Jeffery is practicing again this week, which is good. Zach Miller was more involved. Jordan Howard looked, you know, he looked like he was performing pretty well in that game in week 3. So even though the Bears' defense is pretty banged up, which could potentially put them in negative game flow, I do still think that Brian Hoyer is worthy of at least consideration for this week, just against that really, you know, not very good pass defense.
Yeah, I mean, like the talent level of quarterbacks they faced, you know, 2 elite guys, Marcus Mariota can be on the cusp. I don't think he's there yet, but no, he's still somebody you might consider. You could consider a top 12 quarterback, definitely top 15 quarterback.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and like we saw, you can't see me talking around that. Like I said earlier, you know, they're allowing the most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks. They've also allowed the most passing touchdowns with 10, and they've only picked off 1 pass this year. So it's a 10-1 passing touchdown interception ratio, which is something you kind of have to be kind of excited about if you're going to start Brian Hoyer this week.
Right.
And no, that pace is such a big thing. I'm just looking at Detroit's schedule. This is like a forward-thinking thing we're at this moment, but I feel like you can target Detroit's defense every week this season from a streaming perspective because they're not starting like guys you drafted earlier. After this week, it's, you know, Carson Wentz, Casey Keenum if he still has the job, Kirk Cousins, Brock Osweiler, Sam Bradford, Blake Bortles was a top 12 fantasy quarterback. I'm not sure if he would still consider him that right now. Bradford and then Drew Brees. Like I said, it's a streamer's delight right now. So if you're, you can't really pick up any of those guys off the waiver wire, but gonna make Casey Keenum, I'm gonna assume, is on the waiver wire.
I would hope.
Quarterback leagues, but for those of you that also play in a ton of 1 quarterback leagues, if you're looking ahead for streamers to pick up, that's just a good list right there.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think the pace is big. The matchup is big. And also the other thing with Detroit is that when they're at home, they're not at home this week, but when they're at home, they play in a dome. And again, we do like games that take place in domes. So Brian Hoyer this week, I think he's absolutely a fine play.
What if the game took place in Biodome? Would we still like that?
I don't know. That's a good question.
First off, have you seen Biodome?
No. Okay. I was going to try to play it off as if I had, but I have not.
I should have led with that question. For anybody out there listening to this podcast, 1, feel free to call me an idiot right now.
And I was also sneezing while you said that. I had muted my mic, but I was in the middle of sneezing. So
Biodome, that may have
played a role as well.
Biodome is a movie from one of this generation's finest actors in Pauly Shore. So for any... here's another follow-up question, Jim.
I do not know Pauly Shore. Is that bad?
All right. I'm going to play the technical difficulties song right now while I find myself a new co-host.
Is this my homework for week 5 if I'm still allowed to co-host?
No, I can't put you through that punishment. It's honestly, you're much better off not knowing who Pauly Shore is or what Biodome is.
Oh, I thought Pauly Shore was a girl. Oh, man. I Googled Polly just to figure out who it was. Yeah, I've got no idea. I'm a lost cause, honestly.
Right now, I kind of wish this was a video podcast so everyone can see my reactions. And the...
You know, my face, it was shocked. It's like, oh, that's a dude. All right. So
your homework,
you know,
next week, Jim, is never Google Pauly Shore again. Okay. Just pretend this didn't happen. I'm not going to edit it out because we need to give the audience a laugh after we recommended Bench and Kirk Cousins last week. So we'll leave it in.
Bench Pauly Shore.
There you go. We'll just turn this into a movie streaming recommendation
there we go.
Podcast. You know, yeah. Everybody just go watch Encino Man and be done with it.
I haven't seen that either, man. I'm behind. I'll figure this out, though. I promise.
All right. So we mentioned quarterbacks that are going up against Detroit defense. One of those names was Brock Osweiler, who will end off our rapid streaming segment this week. He's playing the Tennessee Titans. They currently have a implied, well, not the Tennessee Titans, I should say the Houston Texans without J.J. Watt. That's some big news.
Yeah.
Houston, where are you? Okay, there we go. They have their implied team total also went up. I should have checked these implied team totals before I went on the podcast.
They changed. A lot of these changed within the last hour because I was looking at Washington's before, and that one changed pretty quickly. So these things are – this is why you need to monitor them throughout the week as well, just for the people listening, is because these things do change pretty quickly. So it's definitely worthwhile to check things both Wednesday but also like Sunday morning, see how they've changed throughout the week.
Yeah, because I was putting my research notes together about 3 hours ago, and at the time Houston had a 23.5 implied team total. Now it's at 22.5.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put the blame to that on J.J. Watt's injury.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Because they're only favored by 4.5 now. And they were favored by 6.5. And I think I saw J.J. Watt is worth 1.5 points in Vegas. So that would make sense. And I think that, you know, overall, we don't want quarterbacks in negative game script, but the Texans last year, when their defense was bad, what it forced them to do is play a super high tempo, a super high pace, and that would favor Brock Osweiler. So it might not be a terrible thing if J.J. Watt, you know, with him being out, but, you know, you do want the efficiency. And I think that overall this might not be a bad thing. And the other positive with Brock Osweiler is that they could be getting left tackle Dwayne Brown back. He hasn't played yet this year. He started practicing on Monday and was limited again on Wednesday. So I don't think he's supposed to play this week. I believe it's supposed to be week 5 when he debuts. But that's going to be a big boost, not just for him, but for Lamar Miller as well and that entire offense. So I'd be sure to check their injury reports throughout the week, because if Dwayne Brown looks like he'll play, then my confidence in Brock Osweiler and Will Fuller, DeAndre Hopkins, and Lamar Miller, that would all increase quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of interested. This is like a tangent from Brock Osweiler, just because I'm looking at the numbers based on what I had before, and you mentioned they were 6.5 home favorites. Now they're at 4.5. Their implied team total went down by a point, but the over-under stayed the same at 40.5. I find that to be kind of interesting. Can we take anything away from that with this matchup?
As in, like, for the Tennessee Titans, potentially?
Yeah.
I think that that's the logical conclusion. I guess that for me, it would still be a bit too low for the Tennessee Titans, you know, especially based on what Marcus Mariota did last week. The good thing about the Titans is that their offensive line, you know, it seems like it is a lot better this year because they were just wretched last year. So in different situations, maybe I would like the Tennessee Titans, but for me, it's not really something where I can get super jazzed about them, you know, based off of what Mario did to our hearts last week. And overall, just kind of the, you know, I think that Houston's defense is still pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Houston's always been a defense you kind of avoid
for
fantasy purposes, but now we see J.J. Watt could potentially be out for the year.
Yeah. Yep.
I know last year they allowed only 11 top 24 finishes. This year so far they've allowed QB 25, QB 32, QB 14. I know this doesn't really have anything to do with Brock Osweiler at the moment, but it's just kind of interesting that we're on this topic of the Texans and just the implied team total, how Vegas is reacting to the J.J. Watt news. Does this make you more likely to stream quarterbacks against Houston going forward?
Yeah, it does. I think that it would have to be preferably that quarterback on the road. Like, let's say we had the Alex Smith matchup that we had in week two that looked really bad. I think that if you spin that around, give him a healthy offensive line and put the Chiefs at home, then I think that's a spot where I would use Alex Smith. What about you?
No, I would definitely use Alex Smith against them on the road because we've seen what Alex Smith can do.
Right.
I'm just looking at their schedule going forward. I know they play Minnesota next week. I just don't know if it's that at home or
Sammy
on the
B.
road. So I was gonna
Sammy B, our boy.
I was just going to check because that could be something where, you know, again, yeah. In one quarterback, like if you pick up Bradford and stream this week, you might be able to stream him next week. But I just want to see if that's at home or on the road next week. And while I look at that, I'll keep talking so I don't leave any awkward pauses to go with this. Right now, let's see. I'm on the Houston Texans schedule. Week 5, that is at Minnesota.
Okay, so that helps Minnesota. So, yeah, in that situation, if Sam Bradford looks okay this week, then that could be a situation where maybe you'd entertain using him in week 5.
All right, I'm just going to throw this one off to end the podcast. Just because we're on the topic of the Houston Texans, because this week I kind of did some digging into Trevor Siemian's performance this week. No, fantasy QB1, Trevor Siemian, we should start off with, because I was looking at his schedule going forward, and it was really positive minus the Houston Texans matchup. So if I look it up right now from week 4, he had Tampa Bay, Atlanta, San Diego, Houston, San Diego again, Oakland, New Orleans, Kansas City, Jacksonville, Tennessee. And that takes you to week 14. So basically, if you take Houston out of the equation, all of a sudden, Trevor Siemian now just has a favorable matchup every week pretty much through to the fantasy playoffs. So he's somebody we might be talking about again on the podcast. But if you're in a 2-quarterback league looking at a guy you can acquire for a reasonable price, I feel like Trevor Siemian is the guy to target.
I am rocking my Northwestern hat right now, so I would love to talk about Trevor Siemian in the coming weeks.
Jim, why don't you tell the people why you like Northwestern quarterbacks?
We're classmates at good old NU. So, you know, I love me some Trevor Siemian, and it's fun to watch him succeed. It's very weird because he was awful at Northwestern, but part of that was the offensive line, didn't have great receivers. So I'm all aboard the Trevor Siemian Express. I hope he does well.
Do you think we can get him on the podcast?
No, we never actually met, unfortunately. It's not a big school. There aren't a lot of people at Northwestern, but we never met. So I think that one, it can be a goal. I know the people to talk to get it done, but I'm not optimistic that it would happen.
I mean, again, this is another tangent that doesn't have anything to do with right. the podcast, which has kind of been a running theme lately. This is what happens right. when I change time zones.
Right. The red-eye flights, man.
But I was watching the ESPN Watch app last week,
yeah.
and I like to watch the fantasy clips every once in a while, and they had Norm MacDonald on the show, on the podcast,
oh, cool. okay,
interviewed by Matthew Berry, because Norm's got a new book out to promote,
okay.
and they're talking to him about his fantasy team, and Norm was going off. It's like, yeah, I play in a 2-quarterback league, and all of a sudden my ears perked up. I had this smile on my face, because Norm MacDonald is a Canadian icon.
Right.
Like, oh, that's awesome. Norm MacDonald plays 2-quarterback fantasy football league. And then he goes, I don't care much for them. And he's just like, wah, wah.
Undercut. Yeah. Ah, props you up just to bring you down.
Man. I mean, that's what happened to us last week with Kirk Cousins.
You got to send him a passive aggressive note now. I think, I don't know if that's just Minnesotan to send a very passive aggressive, to act in a passive aggressive way, but I think that would be the response from my home state at least.
Well, that's how we elect our politicians in Canada.
That's perfect.
Well, before this podcast goes off the rails any more than it already has, let's just end it right now. It also helps that we have no other quarterbacks to talk about. So that's week 4 in a nutshell. Just a quick rundown for you guys that maybe tuned out and just listened to the last minute of this show. We like Sam Bradford, Kirk Cousins, and Joe Flacco. We do not like Eli Manning, although he still is a nice guy. And we kind of like Dak Prescott. It will depend on how Dez's status going into the game this week. But we also like Alex Smith, Brian Hoyer, and Brock Osweiler, and pick up Trevor Siemian in your 2-quarterback league. That does it for this week's edition of the QB2 Experience Podcast, which is brought to you by 2QBs.com. My name is Sal. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB. Jim, why don't you tell the fine folks out there where they can find you?
They can hit me up on Twitter at Jim Sannes, J-I-M-S-A-N-N-E-S, and also at numberfire.com. Happy to answer any questions you may have there as well.
Perfect. All right, everybody listening out there, have a great week of quarterback streaming, and good luck.